This episode of the Organic BC Podcast was funded by the BC Ministry of Agriculture and Food through the Sustainable Canada Agricultural Partnership. This is the Organic BC Podcast, and I'm your host, Jordan Marr. In this episode, we're going to learn about some promising new robotic weed management tools and an effort that started in Ontario to bring farmers, government, academia, and agritech companies together to evaluate these new tools and encourage the adoption of the most promising ones. But at its heart, this is an episode about cool new weeding technology. So before I engage in any more framing and pondering and humming and hawing, here's a description of a relatively new tool called a farm droid, so that you have something in your mind's eye as we learn about the potential of robots to manage weeds on the farm. Okay, so the farm droid is a robot that weighs around 900 kilos. It moves on two axles in a tadpole formation, so two wheels up front, one wheel in the rear. And in between the two axles is a toolbar with about 10 feet of working width. On top of all that is what looks like a giant tabletop if you're looking at it while standing. It's a great big solar panel that powers the robot. So that's what it looks like. Here's how it works.
What this farm droid robot does is it uses a very, very precise seeding mechanism to seed either an individual seed or small clumps of seed. And it uses RTK GPS to geolocate every time it drops the seed and plants it in a perfect grid pattern across your farm. When the farm droid is done or seeding the crop, it starts to weed that exact same field. Because it knows where every seed is, it'll start to weed that before the seed even comes out of the ground. The robot has a solar panel on the top, and so it is designed to be left unattended for the entire growing season. So it charges itself, it runs through the night. It doesn't require any input from the operator other than if there's a problem.
The voice you just heard was Chuck Barisich.
Hello, my name is Chuck Barisich, and I'm the president of Hagerty Ag Robotics Company, located in southern Ontario. I'm also a farmer down here in southern Ontario with my brother Justin, and we operate and own a grain elevator and crop input supply business called Hagerty Creek Limited.
So, Chuck's a farmer and an innovator, and a few years back, he played an important role in the formation of the Ontario Ministry of Agriculture's Ag Robotics Working Group, a network whose members include government officials, academics, technology company reps, and of course, farmers. Another key person in the working group is its chair, Kristen Obeid.
Hello, my name is Kristen Obeid. I am a weed management specialist with the Ontario Ministry of Agriculture, Food and Rural Affairs. And over the last 3 years, I've become the chair of the Ag Robotics Working Group within Ontario, which has actually expanded into basically a Canada-wide network. And we also have international membership.
The working group serves multiple functions, but foundationally, it exists to help farmers make smart decisions as they consider investments in tools that can be really expensive.
We're trying to basically ground truth all of these technologies so that their producers do not have to be the guinea pigs. We want to work out all the bugs first because this is complicated and sometimes it scares producers. So let's get it, get it to Ontario or Canada and let's see if it actually does, number one, what they say it's supposed to do. And then what else can it do that maybe those companies didn't think of that is a problem that we need to solve for that production system?
We want to solve and deal with challenges that the farmers want us to solve. So the demonstration and the trial work is not about, here's this cool new piece of tech, let's go see what it does. It's the farmers say, I've got a problem, and then we look through our group of our network and say, does anyone have an idea or a solution that may or may not solve that problem? And let's go test that and see.
Kristen and Chuck's leadership within the Ag Robotics Working Group is the reason I asked them for an interview. And the first question I had for both of them was, why robots? And why now? Part of the answer is that the technology has developed to the point that some of these tools are just plain good at delivering on what they promise to do. And meanwhile, they're starting to be able to compete on cost with other methods of weed cultivation. More on cost in a bit. But there has also been a major development in agriculture that has motivated farmers to give these tools serious consideration.
Herbicide resistance is going to be the biggest challenge facing agriculture in the next decade. In Ontario alone, we have 23 different resistant weed species in basically all the cropping systems now.
The weed control options from a chemical perspective are just not available, or they're not as effective as what they used to be.
Resistance is on a trajectory. It's not going away. What we're finding over the years is we're just getting weed species with multiple resistances now.
You know, Roundup resistant Canada flea bane. We're seeing Roundup resistant this water hemp that's coming.
And in horticulture cropping systems, we already don't have a lot of post-emergent herbicide options to control weeds in general, because it's really hard to find herbicides that won't kill the crops but will kill the weeds. And so we're losing all of our post-emergent options in horticultural crops, which just, you know, is really concerning for growers.
If you ever saw a field of resistant water hemp take over a soybean farm, like, it's almost like 50% yield loss. Like, it's very, very dramatic.
Really, there's not a lot of hope in terms of what's coming down the pipeline with respect to new herbicide chemistries, especially for horticultural crops. We just really need to find different integrated weed management solutions for growers to implement and not continually rely on herbicides.
My response to that was, okay, wow, turns out herbicide resistance is a way bigger concern than I realized. But what about boring old mechanical cultivators pulled behind boring old tractors driven by boring old farmers aided by boring old RTK GPS? Why should farmers consider robots instead of those tools? Kristen's reply focused on a potential decrease in soil damage when using the robots.
You know, we really need to think about the soil health on every single farm, because that's what really, we need soil in order to grow our crops, and we need healthy soil to do so. And cultivation really depletes the organic matter over time. Yeah, sure. A lot of these robotics, they're being built to, you know, also do some level of cultivation, but they're actually incorporated with AI or artificial intelligence so that maybe they can just take out the weeds and not disturb the soil. As well as, you know, in terms of how big and how heavy that equipment is with respect to soil compaction. A lot of these robotics are much lighter, so there's a lot less soil compaction.
And Chuck explained the potential for these robots to save farmers the precious commodity of time when compared to traditional mechanical cultivation.
To get really effective weed control, your next factor is time. You know, having the time to be out there, you know, on a repeated schedule to cultivate or to do whatever you're going to do. And that's where the allure of the robotics comes from. We're at a state now where the RTK and auto steer systems have gotten pretty good at, you know, reliability and trustworthiness. We're at the state now where we can take that knowledge, it's moved into an unattended machine. And, you know, we're just at that cusp where these technologies are coming together. So we've got the ancient tech of cultivation being matched with not so old technology of auto steer systems matched with a robotic system. It's kind of coming together.
Overall, Kristen is really bullish on robotic tools and their potential. And I mean, really bullish.
Like, I think, you know, we are at the beginning, you know, maybe of the fourth green revolution in agriculture. I believe it's the future. It's going to really help agriculture in Canada remain sustainable, both economically and environmentally, because there's so many benefits with respect to even the carbon footprint, with respect to some of these units are hybrid, some are totally battery operated, and some are totally solar powered. And so there's so many different options and opportunities for this technology, I believe, in agriculture in Canada.
At this point, I imagine most listeners are thinking, this all seems interesting, Jordan, but tell me what it costs. Okay, I'll tell you what these robots cost, but not really, because their costs are quite variable. I discussed around six robots with Kristen and Chuck, and the prices they mentioned range from around $60,000 to $250,000, depending on the robot, all prices in CAD. At the top of this episode, Chuck described a solar-powered robot called a farm droid that does precision seeding and weeding completely autonomously, and that tool goes for around $130,000. But I know what you're really wondering. What you're really wondering is not cost per se, but cost effectiveness or value proposition. That's also hard to answer because the value of one of these machines is really going to depend on the context of any given farm. But here's how Chuck explained the value proposition of the farm droid and other robots.
The way that work out the ROI on this is, you know, it will never, these robots will never compete against a 120-foot wide sprayer spraying a herbicide. Like they're that just is never going to happen. Where the robots compete is, let's say that, you know, you are used to bringing in a manual weeding crew that you have to round up and find. The robots can be very cost effective in that scenario. The other thing that the robots allow is, traditionally when a farmer has to cultivate, you know, they have to take one of their either themselves or one of their top workers, put them in the tractor, and they have a certain amount of time every week to go over across that field. Well, this robot has, you know, it has nothing else to do. So it actually doesn't matter that it's moving slowly so long as it gets over the field. And so then the farmer or the farm manager, you know, typically those are your highest paid employees. They can be doing something else of more value than sitting in a tractor seat dragging a cultivator. And whether that is seeding a different crop or monitoring for diseases or something else, right? It's more of an return on the opportunity cost as much as it is a return on the cost of that operation itself.
What we've learned so far is that these tools are very promising, albeit a little pricey currently. Of course, just about every decision on the farm comes with trade-offs, and in a few minutes, we'll hear about the trade-offs and limitations of these tools. But first, Chuck's going to describe a couple more of the tools that the AgRobotic Working Group has been evaluating. You already heard about the farm droid, which is best suited to higher-value horticultural crops, like carrots or beets. But the farm droid is too low to the ground, too small, and too slow to make much economic sense for field crops like soy and corn. So I asked Chuck about options for those crops.
So for people who are growing, you know, corn and soybeans and these kinds of things, you know, we are more into a robot like the Roboti or the Nio Oreo. And these robots, you know, they're very similar machines. Both the Roboti and the Oreo, you know, you can probably go through crops that are waist high or more. They can do 4 to 6 rows at a time, like 4 to 6 30-inch rows at a time. The only difference between the two is the Nio Oreo is a electric robot, and the Roboti has a little diesel engine on it. And the Roboti can run for about 60 hours on a tank of fuel, and the Oreo is about 8 to 10 hours per battery charge. So it really depends on your crop. They're both very, very precise machines. And what's nice about them is that they both have a 3-point hitch attachment. So you can take your existing implement, whether it's a cultivator or whatever you've got, and it'll fit, you know, on those machines. They both have, you know, camera guidance systems to guide the tooling. And they can accommodate a bigger scale of acres, you know. So the Oreo, for example, is probably good for a 50-acre field. The Roboti is probably a bit more than that, maybe closer to 100 acres. They're in that 250 to 300,000 range for those machines.
Okay, let's go back to horticultural crops for one more interesting tool. A company called Nexus offers a tool called Le Chèvre, or the goat, and it tackles a different weeding application than something like the farm droid does.
And it's a little different than the other systems in the market, so I want to be clear. But what the goat does is it has a series of cameras under, you know, at the front of the machine. So as it's driving across the field, it's looking at the row of crop, and the cameras are programmed to know what that crop is. So, for example, if it's a carrot or a lettuce or something like that, the vision systems know that those are lettuce plants, for example. If it sees anything else that is not a lettuce plant, then it sends a pair of mechanical grippers down into the ground to remove whatever that obstacle is. And the robot can be trained to say, you know, on the size of the weed, you know, so if the weed is like microscopic, you can tell it don't go for it, it's too small. But it has the advantage of being able to pull out slightly larger weeds. So we can pull weeds out that are, you know, probably 2 or 3 inches tall, which the other systems cannot do. So the potential of the Nexus or the GOAT is that there's less soil disturbance, which is an attractive property, and some more forgiveness on the size of weeding. And where we're seeing some interest in the robot like that is farmers who might use a setup herbicide program where they put down some form of residual, and then they use the robot from that point on to do the weed control. And so the robot moves along, you know, as quickly as it needs to. Generally speaking, they're trying to get the robot up to 5 acres in a 24-hour day. What they're trying to go after is approximately 3 workers, from what, you know, is what they're trying to say. Like, what can 3 workers do in a day?
As Chuck ran me through these different examples, one thing that became clear to me is that all of them appear to depend on cultivated cropping systems. That is, rows of crops with bare soil separating them, which made me wonder about options for no-till systems.
So for the most part, the machinery that we're dealing with, there's not a great fit in a no-till system. So myself and my brother and I on our farm, we actually are no-tillers. And one of the challenges that we have is that there's too much trash for a cultivator to deal with. You know, basically you can't deal with any trash at all. And so we have one grower who is doing a trial with the robotic in a strip-till system where they are using the robot, you know, in the strips. And so they're doing traditional spraying, you know, between the strips and then using the robot, you know, kind of closer to the crop. So that's one option. The other thing that we're looking at is, you know, what other tooling options are there? And this is where you start moving into alternative technologies, such as whether it's laser weeders or spot sprayers or electrical weeders that can provide a more spot weeding system. Now, those systems, again, when we go into them, they're much more complicated and they're much more costly. So like the second that you move away from cultivation, you know, again, this is, again, you talk about trade-offs, you know, nothing is cheaper than a cultivator. And the second that you start moving to vision systems, AI systems, cameras, mechanical arms, lasers, whatever it is, all of a sudden that gets very, very costly very, very quickly.
You heard Chuck use the L word in that last clip, limitations, which is a good segue into talking about limitations, barriers, and trade-offs. As you heard earlier, Chuck and Kristen are optimistic about the role these machines can and will play on the farm, but they do come with limitations that need to be understood, which Chuck and Kristen described to me.
We're very cautious, you know, as a company on, you know, kind of over-promising what these machines can do. And that's why I led this off by saying it's not a silver bullet, right? It's not magic. There are conditions. And so what we have found is that, you know, your soil conditions have to be such that the robot can accommodate it in varying conditions. So we are more confident with the FarmDroid robot operating on a sandier soil in wetter conditions than we are on clay soil. And so we're more confident that the FarmDroid can be on a bigger parcel of land on sand than on clay. And we've been telling people, you know, if you've got, you know, like, you know, clay and these kinds of things, you need to restrict the acres so that you can ensure that in inclement weather, the robot can catch up and keep ahead of the weeds.
You really do need to have good internet good broadband, because you know, all of this technology is RTK, GPS. You know, you need to have that ability to have be connected at all times. So that's a little bit of a barrier.
The second hurdle that I want to touch on is that a lot of farmers have already invested in a bunch of equipment. And, you know, so that investment is sitting there. The purchase of the new technology does not generally accommodate incorporating their initial investment and adding on to it. It usually involves removing it or replacing that investment. And that's a tough pill to swallow for some farmers, because, you know, most people aren't rolling around in cash, and you know, they're sitting there saying, hey, I already spent my $300,000 or $400,000 on a tractor or on this piece of equipment or on this or whatever, and you're asking me to do that again and then abandon my initial investment. And that is a very real hurdle, and it's not something to make light of. You know, I'm not going to sit there and say that the farmers are resistant to change because they're ill-informed or backwards or something like that. They have some very legitimate reasons to be hesitant.
And let's face it, just like our cell phones or our flat screen TVs, every year the technology gets better and better. And so, you know, in 5 years' time, what we're working with now, there's going to be an upgraded version, right? And so there's a little bit of a fear about that too. Are the producers going to buy something that's already out of date, and then they're going to have to buy something new? There's other questions around the service. You know, if I'm buying a robot for France, what happens if it breaks down? You know, and I think there's some businesses within Ontario and Canada that are trying to solve some of those issues so that they can provide those kind of services to producers that purchase the equipment. So yeah, there's still lots of questions and there's still lots of hurdles before there'll be widespread adoption, but I think we're on a good path forward to help answer those questions with our working group.
So those are some general limitations, and here's an example of some considerations for a specific tool. In this case, it's the farm droid that Chuck described at the top of this episode.
The trade-off that it has for its precision is that it's very, very slow. Like, so its top speed is 0.8 kilometers an hour. And so because it's so slow, you know, as a larger producer, if you were trying to have, let's say, 50 acres of a crop planted on the same day so that it gets harvested, you know, at that sizing, the farm droid is not for you unless you have multiple of them in the same field. So the farm droid can only handle about, you know, 8 acres every 24-hour period. And so, you know, if you're used to planting that again in one day, it might take 3 or 4 days to plant that crop. The other thing that you have to be cognizant of, you know, from an operational perspective, is that it also takes the farm droid, you know, only 8 acres a day for the weeding process. And so you have to size the field that you're putting it in appropriately so that the farm droid can get across that field and do the weeding, you know, before the weeds get too big that it can't take them out. And generally that's every 4 to 5 days. And so if you kind of do that math, you know, you're limited to a 25-acre to 40-acre field that this robot can look after. And the farm droid also, because it's, you know, it's designed for a crop, you know, it's not that easy to move it, like, from one field to the other. There's some logistical challenges to doing that. Like, it's designed to be put into a field and left there. So what we discovered, like, in a real life circumstance, is we put the farm droid on a fairly heavy clay farm, and what we discovered was that it wasn't actually the soil that caused the problem when it rained. It was the trash, like any residual, you know, roots and stalk and whatever from the previous crop. You know, we would get, you know, a tenth of an inch or a few millimeters of rain, and it would make that trash sticky and the tooling of the farm droid couldn't handle that. It would plug up.
So those are some considerations to keep in mind. But let's remember, both Chuck and Kristen are really optimistic about these tools' potential. So I asked them to describe one or two success stories they've observed in their trials.
In the Holland Marsh area of Ontario, we have a resistant pigweed, and it's now resistant to two groups of herbicides that pretty much are the two herbicides that the growers use in their carrot and onion production rotation. And we've had tremendous success, actually, with this. We've tested it in sugar beets, which it was originally developed for by two brothers in Denmark for the organic sugar beet industry. Tested it first in 2022 in the sugar beets and rutabagas and had excellent results. And then this past year trialed it in onions and again with great results.
So I think, you know, one of the robots that we've used is called a Nio Oz. And we had a great experience with one of our customers using it to mark out rows of garlic and then plant that garlic and then weed the garlic over the summer. And that was a great use case. And in those scenarios where the farmer's using the robot, they're using the robot like an assistant. And what that robot does for them is it eliminates, you know, 80 to 90% of the weeding that has to happen. And so in a case like that, you know, the farmer looks at it and they say, okay, I still have to do some weeding by hand, but boy, you know, a large portion of the work is gone. And, you know, and that's a pretty nice use case. The other one that we had last year was, you know, planting onions with the farm droid and getting a more consistent size of onion sets is very interesting, you know, for the growers. You know, there's still some work to do, but, you know, they're very interested in that because it's a way to simplify the onion planting process and, you know, also change what the outcome of the onion is.
So that just about covers it for this episode. But I wanted to end with a last word from each of my guests. And because we like contrasts on the Organic BC podcast, I've chosen a word of caution from Chuck and a word of optimism from Kristen.
Beware the overpromising. Like, there are lots of robotics companies who make lots of wonderful claims on their websites. And not all of the stuff that we're doing works. You know, I'm a very optimistic person and I love the technology, but boy, I don't want to oversell it. There's a lot of hype around AI and machine learning and all this kind of stuff. There's a lot of potential there, you know, a lot of potential, but there's also a lot of hype.
Yeah, some really exciting stuff. I think the market will pick the winners and the losers, but I think all of the technology is very, very promising. And I just look forward to continue to be able to work with these companies and help them adapt their technology so they work in Ontario and Canadian production systems. It's been tremendously fun, something that I just fell into, and it really has become most of my job these days. So it has been great.
Now, if you want to learn more about any of the tools discussed herein, or you want to learn more about the Agrobotics Working Group that Kristen chairs, there are notes attached to this episode with useful links. But if you're all thumbs and you can't find the notes, try Googling Ontario Agrobotics Working Group or Haggerty Agrobotics, which is a company Chuck is associated with. Each of these two searches should take you in the right direction. And that's about it for this episode, which was funded by the BC Ministry of Agriculture and Food through the Sustainable Canada Agricultural Partnership. Opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the host and guests, and not necessarily those of the Government of Canada or the BC Ministry of Agriculture and Food. The Government of Canada, the BC Ministry of Agriculture and Food, and their directors, agents, employees, or contractors will not be liable for any claims, damages, or losses of any kind whatsoever arising out of the use of or reliance upon this information. I hope you enjoyed that, everyone, and I will talk to you soon.